Going to finish up our sermon series on the Sermon on the Plain today. Some of you will be glad to see it go. It's the kind of sermon series that's not super enjoyable because the teachings of Christ, whether you're reading it from the Sermon on the Mount or the Sermon on the Plain, they're difficult teachings on purpose. It's much more enjoyable when Jesus is talking about how he's going to forgive you rather than how you should forgive others, right? One of those is easy. One of those is much more difficult. C.S. Lewis famously said he didn't care for the Sermon on the Mount. And when asked why he didn't like the Lord's most famous sermon, he responded, "As to caring for the Sermon on the Mount, if caring for here means liking or enjoying, I suppose no one cares for it. Who can like being knocked flat on his face by a sledgehammer? I can hardly imagine a more deadly spiritual condition than that of a man who can read that passage with tranquil pleasure." So if you can read the Sermon on the Mount and enjoy it, you read it wrong, right? There's something wrong with you. You're dead inside. Because it's a challenging text. It doesn't say, hey, you're doing great. It says there's a long way to go for each and every one of us. And certainly that'll be the case again today. And today's section is going to be the section about judge not. Now, normally, when someone talks about judge not, there's this great temptation to try to reduce the meaning of the text, to have it mean less than it apparently does. Why? Because if it means all that it apparently does, it'd be very troublesome. And fair enough, I'll preach that sermon for like 30 seconds. I'll give myself that long. You're right. You can't go through life without any discernment whatsoever. That's not possible. Jesus is not saying when you become a Christian, check your brain at the door and make no determination about morality or right and wrong for the rest of your days. If somebody asks you if murder is wrong, just shrug your shoulders and say, I don't know, I don't judge. Right? No, that's not the point of the text. Certainly not. It doesn't mean that. But the problem is when we start down that road of saying what it doesn't mean, we have a tendency to just start excusing all the things we actually want to do. And judge not means virtually nothing. Today, I kind of want to lean the other direction. Not only does judge not mean something, I suspect it actually means a lot more than we give it credit for. For example, judge not means more than merely don't condemn. And you get that in Luke's text. When you read it, judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. He has its own statement for don't condemn. And then he goes on, forgive and you'll be forgiven, give and it'll be given to you, and so forth, right? He has his own statement, condemn not and you'll not be condemned. But separate and previous to that, he says, judge not and you won't be judged. So in Luke's rendition of it, it's not merely saying don't think mean thoughts about other people. He means that too. That's in the next expression, don't condemn. But he has this standalone expression, judge not, and you will not be judged. Furthermore, in Luke's account in the Sermon on the Plain, it's part of this larger context that we've been looking at for 2 weeks now. It's starting in verses 20 through 26 with blessed are the poor, and then 27 through 36 with love your enemies. In both of those cases, you are instructed by Jesus to get the short end of the stick. In a world full of wealth and prosperity, you are supposed to be interested in having less. Blessed are the poor. In a world full of injustice, of wrongdoing, of violence and hurt and pain, you are supposed to be willing to accept the possibility that you will show love to somebody who never shows love to you. In fact, that you will show love to somebody who shows nothing but animosity towards you, and you get nothing in return for it. See what has in common in both those passages? One's economics, one's, you know, ethics and everyday living and morality and relationships. But in both cases, Jesus says the Christian is okay with the idea that we get the short end of the stick. And then he follows that with, judge not, that you be not judged. I think when you read these passages together, you're left with maybe a different set of questions than you might have if you just read the sentence on its own. Is there any justice in the universe? You know, it's hard enough when I go out and try to make the world a good, fair, wonderful place, it still doesn't usually work out that way, does it? Has anybody done that? Has anybody tried to make your life perfectly just and balanced and fair in all your relationships, and everybody who wrongs you gets an equal amount of wrong back, and everyone who does good gets an equal amount of good back? You've got an accountant back there who's keeping track of pluses and minuses of who's wronged you, and you've got it all sorted out, right? You've got everything perfect. No, it never works that way, even when we try. And to go further, Jesus says you probably should stop trying. Judge not that you be not judged. If I don't look out for me, who will? There's lots of people out there looking out for themselves. I think we've got that part covered. Who's going to look out for me? When I'm wronged, who makes it right if it's not me? Who makes sure the universe is fair? You know, it's a deeply innate human craving for fair play. You go to any playground on the planet. Go to elementary school, find a playground, find a game of any kind, basketball, four square, whatever, and watch a little while, just give it a few minutes, and someone's going to say, hey, not fair. Where did they learn that? These kids haven't had a class on jurisprudence or constitutional law. They haven't read books by great philosophers about fair play and justice in the universe. Where do they learn fair good, not fair bad? Where do they learn to be morally outraged by cheating when somebody else does it? Where do we learn that? It just comes hardwired in. We crave justice and fairness. And then there's also part of us that's selfish about it. We really crave justice and fairness for us, and it really irks me that I don't feel like I've got enough. Feel like other people get more than their fair share, and I feel like maybe somebody needs to look out for Ben once in a while. If I don't look out for me, who will? I think that's the set of questions that revolve around Luke's account of the famous judge not passage. Because the answer is still from Christ, from God, not you. In Luke 6:37, in the first part of 38, judge not and you will not be judged, condemn not and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. The first two sections cover this idea of your job is not to sort out the rights and the wrongs in the world. They're negative statements. Here are some things you don't do. Your job is not to go out and sort out all the wrongs and rights you see in the universe and put people in their little categories, good person over here, bad person over here, good action over here, bad action over there. That isn't the job that's been assigned to you. Furthermore, in the second half, forgive and you'll be forgiven, give and it will be given to you. Your job is to err on the side of the good kind of injustice, if you will, right? There's two kinds of injustice, when you don't get what you deserve and when you get more than you deserve, right? If you owe me $10 and you give me $8, that's not fair, and I got cheated. If you owe me $10 and you give me $12, that's not fair, but I'm okay with it. See the difference? In the second half of the passage, forgive. Well, that's not really fair. You owe me a debt of gratitude or honor or kindness, and I just say, that's right. It's not really fair, but it's the good kind of not fair. Give. You haven't paid me for those goods and services. I'm just giving them to you. You see. And then it says in the text, it will be forgiven you. It will be given to you. But those are passive voice. Little grammar there. Those are passive statements. It doesn't say, forgive and then go take. Give and then go collect. It says, forgive and then do nothing. Sit there and wait for fairness and justice to come back around. Give and then do nothing. Sit there and wait for fairness and justice to come back around. So in both halves of the passage, there's a discussion of what's just and what's fair, but more importantly, notice who's not in charge of it. The condemning and the judging and the sorting out of justice, not your job. The collecting and the returning and getting, also not your job. Your job is extraordinarily passive. Scripture consistently teaches that it is not our job to settle the balance sheets of the universe. It's a great, great big universe out there, and there's lots of people in it, and lots of wrongs, and a lot of them are yours. Some of them are done to you, some of them are by you. There's lots of wrongs in the universe. It's not your job to settle the accounts. Oh, there is a part of every one of us, every single one of us that wants that job. There's a smarter part of it that knows we shouldn't, but there's part of us that wants to go out and be the avenger of justice and to go right every wrong, which is why Scripture so consistently has to remind us, not your job. Take a little excursion with me to James. We'll come back to Luke. But in James chapter 2, 12 and 13, he says it like this. So speak and so act as those who are to be judged under the law of liberty. For judgment is without mercy to one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Very similar statements there, just worded differently. When you speak and when you act, James says, you make sure you're the one acting as the one to be judged. If we're in a courtroom, you are not the one with the robe and the gavel. That's not your place in this drama. You speak and you act not as the one doing the judging. That's not your role. In fact, he says, if it was, you'd be in trouble. Judgment is without mercy to the one who's shown no mercy. Your job is to do what Luke has already told us, to forgive and to give, to show mercy, and then let mercy win. See, he's not saying your job is to go out and settle the accounts and make sure everything's fair. Quite the opposite. He says you're, in a sense, are going to go out and contribute to the unfairness of the world, but the good kind of unfairness. You're going to add mercy to it. You're going to add kindness to it. You're going to forgive where it's not warranted. We are not the judge in that courtroom is the big point. We are the accused. That's James's big master point there. So speak and so act as one who is to be judged. And I think that's the sentiment that runs underneath the Sermon on the Mount. It runs underneath the Sermon on the Plain. It runs under a lot of Jesus' teaching. It's not so much about remembering to do this and not do that. It's more about remembering who you are. When we think we're the cosmic justice creator, when we think we're the great universal judge, the next thing that we do is almost always terrible. That's not a job for us. We can't do it. In fact, returning back to Luke for a minute, that's exactly what he says next in verses 41 through 42. What does it look like when we take the job that isn't ours? Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take out the speck that is in your eye," when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite! First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take out the speck that is in your brother's eye. It's one of the most memorable little jokes that Jesus ever tells. I mean, it's intentionally funny. The words are just as silly as they sound. There's a piece of sawdust in somebody else's eye, and you have like a construction beam coming out of your eye. I don't even know how that would work, right? It's an absurd image. Jesus is telling a joke. It's okay to laugh at it. He says, there's a beam, a construction beam, load-bearing beam, holding up the temple, coming out of your eye, and you look at somebody else and say, yeah, a little problem right there, missed a spot. And he says, that's what happens when you guys do it. When you guys do it, this is the way it looks. I mean, don't read that wrong. He's not saying, when you judge, make sure you do it well like this. He's saying, when you judge, you always do it like this. This is what happens when you guys put yourselves in charge. It always does. Why? Because you're hypocrites. He says, that's who we are. We are not qualified to bring about justice. And if justice were left up to us, we would fail. It's only in our fantasies and our dream where we have this ultimate power to make things right. You know why we love superhero movies? It's not just flashy costumes and action sequences. We love the idea that there could be someone kind of like us, but better, who had the power to make the wrong things right. It's a human fantasy that there is somebody out there who could just be a little better than us, and then we could put everything right. And what Jesus says is, it's not going to work. Even if he's from Krypton, it's not going to work. Even if he has X-ray vision, not going to work. You are not qualified. And if it's up to you, justice will fail. So let's go back then to our original set of questions. Okay, I apparently am not the judge. I apparently don't have that job. I'm not even qualified to do that job. And if I do it, I make a mess of it. So, is there any justice in the universe? If I don't look out for me, who will? You understand, at this point in the story, if you live in a human-centered universe where we're the only players on the stage, we're in trouble. Because we've just ruled out the only people we know who could bring about justice. If it's not us, who is it? But for the Christian, there is this other option. For the believer, we can sit back and even be a little bit, say this cautiously, don't misunderstand it, we can be a little bit passive about justice, in a sense, because we don't believe it's entirely our job. And to be fair, you should act justly. This is not a suggestion that you should go out and be unfair just to see what God does with it, right? Don't do that. But the overall tenor of this passage is, it's not up to you. Which brings me then to the verse that really shook me this last week or two as I was reading it. This little verse, the second half of Luke 6:38. In my entire life, I don't think I'd ever preached on this verse. And so that immediately got my attention. I thought, well, has that been there all along? Did somebody slip this into my Bible? It's not in Matthew's account. When we preach out of Matthew 7, judge not that you be not judged, with not judgment you judge, you shall be judged, and on it goes for five verses. This little line is not in there. It's only in Luke 6. And it's in between the two judgment passages we've just read. Judge not and beam in your eye. And in between is this strange little line that almost seems misplaced. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Now that last bit, that sounds familiar. That's something that Matthew has. Well, what measure you meet, it shall be measured back to you, right? But it's that other part. What is that about? Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. I felt like I was onto something with this verse as I was studying it, trying to understand the significance of it. And I had it, you ever have an idea that's just like on the edge of your brain and you can't quite get a handle on it? And I've been chasing it all week, and I went to the grocery store. All my good sermons involve trips for chips and salsa, it turns out. Went to the grocery store, and yes, bought some more chips, because I have boys, and that's what we eat. There's a new cashier who is checking me out, and I know she's new because there's someone behind her telling her what to do, right? And she's checking me out, and she takes the first bag of chips, and she puts it into the little sack, right? And then she says, I don't think I can get this other one in there. And the guy behind her says, oh, yeah, you can. They're like 99% air. Sure enough, you could put like 10 more in there because it's just air. And that's when it dawns on me that that's a pretty good description of human justice. Human justice is an empty bag of chips. Right? You have never in your life bought a bag of chips and thought, I got exactly what I paid for there. That's exactly how many chips I thought would be in that bag. Perfect. No, you always get home, and there's this moment where you have, because I buy the family size, and it's like this big, and you think, I will never need to buy chips again. And you open the bag, and you think, I already need more chips. That it's 99% air, and I understand there's some packaging reason that makes that make sense. But innately, you're disappointed by that. Okay, folks, that is what human justice looks like. Every time we do it. every court case, everywhere, every time we get even, every time we try to be just, it comes out like an empty bag of chips. There's a little justice in there. There is. You can get a little taste of it. Yeah, got him. The rest of it is air. How often do we see wrongs done and the bad guys get away with it? It's an empty bag of chips. How often, even when we throw the book at them, I mean, we catch the bad guy, we give them every possible penalty allowed by law, and we stretch it and make out some more. We invent some that are cruel and unusual just to make sure. At the end, do you feel like it was fair? Did we undo the wrong that they did? The thing they did is still wrong. We just put enough wrong on the other side to make us feel like we balanced it out. This is human justice. Read a headline. I'm very interested in the situation in Ukraine because my friend Brandon's over there. And I've been reading some Ukrainian headlines with this whole Russian thing. I don't understand half of it. I don't really understand international politics at all. It's scary to me. And when I look at this headline, though, this one caught my attention. So much so that when I read it on my phone, I got up and walked around the church building finding other people to read it to and say, does this sound right to you? And here, the headline was, it was about, I won't even give you the headline, I'll give you the first sentence of the article. It was about instructions given to Ukrainian armed forces. It says, Ukrainian armed forces told today by their government, when you're hit by Russian artillery fire, don't fire back because it might provoke the Russians. Okay, you get that too. I picked that out, I read it, and I walked into Naomi's office, and I said, does this sound right? You've been hit by an artillery shell that they fired at you, and your government says, hey, don't fire back. You might make them mad. Okay. I feel like that ship has sailed. But the point is about justice that I'm trying to make. That's how human justice actually works. Those are our options. Somebody lobs an artillery shell, and it lands in your lap. Something awful happens to you. What are your choices? Well, you can lob one back. It doesn't undo the fact that you've been hit by an artillery shell. It doesn't make anything actually better. In fact, now there's going to be collateral damage on that side. Somebody who didn't deserve it. Somebody who deserved it might get hit. You might have good aim. But somebody who didn't deserve it will also get hit. And even the guy who deserved it, his wife at home is a widow now, and she didn't ask for that. I mean, you see my point? You lob it back, nothing's actually better. You just feel better. For a little while. Or you don't throw it back, and now you're just a guy with an artillery shell in his lap. Empty bag of chips. Human justice never actually rights any wrongs. What is Luke saying? Jesus and Luke is saying, but divine justice, if you could get out of the justice business for a minute and let God do his part and stop making it worse, he says it's an overflowing jar. Packed down, right? You guys know how to get the to-go boxes for the buffet, right? When they make my to-go box at the buffet, they kind of put a scoop in there. That's not how I make my box. Put that scoop and you pack it down and you put another and you pack it down and you find some empty spots and you pack some in there. I will never eat any of this. But it's the principle of the thing. It's the principle of the thing that if I'm paying for it, I'm going to get everything I can get into the box. Packed down, right? Jesus says that's the justice of God. Overflowing, shaken down, packed down, more than you bargained for. Now, when you say it like that, do you understand the point Jesus is making? It's not the choice between my justice and God's justice. It's the choice between an empty bag of chips that will always leave you disappointed and more justice than you ever believed possible. In fact, I even think, if you'll go with me, just a creative stretch here for a moment, Jesus might even be referencing a specific story from the Old Testament. In 1 Kings chapter 17, 8 through 16, I'll just hurriedly summarize it. There's a widow in the city of Zarephath who has a son, and she and her son, there's a famine in the land, and they're poor, and they are starving. And the prophet Elijah comes up, and he says, hey, I'd like some water. And she says, fine, here's some water. He says, while you're at it, I'd like that bread, that little cake you're making. And she says, I don't think you understand. This is my last cake. This is my last piece of bread. This is my last oil. This is my last flour. This is my last everything. I'm going to make this cake. My son and I are going to split it. And then we're going to starve to death. And Elijah, who one of the Bible's strange characters, but wonderful, says, yeah, I know. You should give it to me. Because God makes things right. And so she does. She gives him that last bit of bread. She's not interested in getting hers. She doesn't ask for compensation. She's not trying to sort out the justice in the universe. She's a widow. I mean, if anybody deserves the cake, it's her and her son. She's not asking that question. She just gives. Some of you may remember how the story ends. Ending number one, a miracle transpires, and she has a jar of oil and various things used in the making of bread, and it never runs out. The more she takes out, the more God puts in. The more she takes out, the more God puts in. And over again, throughout the course of the time, it never runs out. If she had sought her own to get herself justice and fair play in the universe, she would have acquired exactly one piece of bread. She and her son would have eaten it. She and her son would have starved. Instead, she gave, and it was given unto her, overflowing, packed down, filling the jar, more than she could have possibly imagined. And that's not even the end of the story. Because after that, she becomes friends with this strange guy who asked for bread named Elijah. And time passes, and her son dies. He becomes ill, and he dies. And the prophet goes upstairs in the next passage and brings him back to life. Seeing the point? If she seeks justice, what does the empty bag of chips look like? One last piece of bread. She gets what's hers. End of story. When she says, it's not my job anyway, I trust God to make it right, she not only eats, but she sees her son raised to life, overflowing, packed down. That's the nature of God's justice. It doesn't disappoint. We can trust God with justice. We can trust God with more than justice. Our problem in the passage, judge not that you be not judged, is a lack of imagination. The most we can imagine God doing is some version of what we would do if we were in charge. Jesus says, you're not in charge. If you were, it'd be terrible. And God does more. And if you trust in him to do that, you find you don't need to judge. You get something far better. Would you bow with me in prayer? Our Father and our God, we have not trusted you with our whole heart as we should. We have too often tried to right the wrongs of this universe with our own power and have failed. We have left ourselves empty where you would make us full. God, teach us your ways. Teach us to trust in you, to judge not, to condemn not, to forgive and to give, and to find in you all that we need. This we pray in the name of Jesus, your Son. Amen.